Welcome to the Science Update Podcast. I'm Bob Hirshon, and this is the podcast for December 4th, 2009.
The Science Update Podcast is produced by AAAS, advancing science, serving society.
This week, we've got the latest bad news about cigarettes and a surprising report about ancient mummies who appear to have suffered from heart disease. But first, Suzanne Bard tells us why some older people may have protection against the H1N1 virus that young folks don't.
If you're over 60, you may have been asked to hold off on getting the vaccine for H1N1 virus or swine flu until more supplies become available. That's because many older people have already been exposed to some form of H1N1 at some point in their lives due to various outbreaks during the early to mid-20th century. Infectious disease specialist William Schaffner of Vanderbilt University School of Medicine says this means they likely still carry antibodies that are effective against the modern H1N1 virus.
And here we have a paradox, because apparently people age about 60 or over back in the 1950s were exposed to a very similar virus, not the same, but they got over that and then were left with protection. That protection has persisted until the present time. So folks with gray hair seem to be advantaged. It's perhaps the only advantage of being a little bit older. And this is a population much less affected with this new H1N1 virus, and that's why they've been asked to go to the back of the line and let others be vaccinated first. And then when we get more vaccine into the community, they can also come forward and be vaccinated.
He says the heightened immunity doesn't just extend to people exposed to H1N1 in the 50s. In 1918, the same virus caused a worldwide pandemic, killing millions and millions of people. But the survivors were left with potent antibodies against the illness that persist up to nearly a century later.
You can be infected with some virus 30, 40, 50, 60, even longer years ago, and we can test you now and show that the protection persists. It's remarkable.
The CDC found that the H1N1 antibodies carried by elderly survivors of the 1918 pandemic are so potent that mice injected with them can survive an infection by the virus that would otherwise kill them.
It's important to recognize that not everyone has this protection. And indeed, it's clear that if and when somebody who's older does get infected with H1N1, it appears to have the same kind of potentially serious consequences that regular influenza does in that circumstance. And that's why, once the vaccine becomes available, we would like everyone who's older also to be vaccinated, so we can be sure that they're all then protected.
It's also recommended that older folks, as well as younger people, be vaccinated against the regular seasonal flu every year. That's because seasonal flu changes much faster than H1N1 does, and so last year's shot doesn't mean you'll be immune to the strain that's going around this year.
Thanks, Suzanne. Now, we know many people would like to avoid exposure to the flu altogether, and voracious reader Robert Camp of Jupiter, Florida, wrote to ask if he's at risk of catching either seasonal flu or the H1N1 virus from library books. Dr. Schaffner says not to worry.
The inanimate environment plays a very tiny role in the transmission of influenza viruses. What we should be reassured about is that viruses on inanimate surfaces are usually there in very small numbers, not an infectious dose, because it takes an infectious dose to get us, and the viruses die off very, very rapidly.
He says infected people carry highly concentrated doses of influenza virus, so what you really have to worry about is person-to-person contact. And unfortunately, people infected with the flu may not show symptoms for up to 2 days, but are still contagious.
Influenza is spread, whether H1N1 or the seasonal influenza, through close contact between people. The infection is mostly in the throat and in the upper part of the bronchial tubes. So as we breathe out, the air picks up microscopic particles that actually contain the virus. If you're now standing within 3 feet of the other person, when you breathe in, you may actually inhale some of those microscopic particles that contain the virus, and then the virus gets down into your bronchial tubes and can land on the mucous membranes and thus infect you. And then also, if you touch another person, you can get some virus on your hands and then touch your own mucous membranes.
Of course, washing your hands with soap and water regularly throughout the day can help decrease your chances of getting infected. He also says sanitizing wipes and hand sanitizers are effective as long as you rub your hands vigorously enough to kill the virus. Next, Justin Warner tells us about sanitary concerns regarding cigarettes.
As if cigarettes weren't unhealthy enough, a new study has found that they're chock full of potentially harmful bacteria. The work was led by Amy Sapkota of the University of Maryland School of Public Health.
We tested four major brands of cigarettes, and we found a great diversity of microbes in the cigarettes, and in particular, we found hundreds of human pathogens.
Pathogens that cause pneumonia, food poisoning, meningitis, and many other illnesses.
And no one had ever really looked at this before. Most people focus on chemical carcinogens and other particulate matter that can lead to smoking-related diseases.
But do the germs actually make smokers sick? We can't yet say for sure, but it's established that smokers are more prone to bacterial infections than non-smokers, and past studies have found elevated bacterial counts in smokers' noses and mouths. Other more limited work suggests that at least some bacteria can survive the high temperature of a lit cigarette and pass through a filter. If so, Sapkota says the bacteria may not only cause illnesses directly, they may even trigger chemical reactions that contribute to smoking-related cancer.
Thanks, Justin. As your car's brakes wear down, they release bits of metal and other material into the air. Now, scientists in Switzerland have found that these brake emissions could potentially affect your health. University of Bern cell biologist Barbara Roten and her colleagues put a box containing lung cell cultures around a car's braking system. They found that both decelerating and fully braking increased oxidative stress to the cells.
And for the full stop, we have also found some increase in inflammatory responses.
Over time, these effects could cause respiratory problems. Roten says it would be technically difficult to link real-life illnesses back to brake emissions alone. Still, considering that brake particles make up 15 to 20% of auto emissions, the findings suggest it may be worthwhile to design cleaner brakes. Finally today, we often think of heart disease as a consequence of our modern diet and lifestyle. But Suzanne reports on a recent study of mummies that calls this assumption into question.
If you look at ancient Egyptian murals, the people in them appear rather lean and fit. But UC Irvine cardiologist Greg Thomas decided to take a closer look. He was taking a break from a conference on heart health in Egypt when he visited the Museum of Egyptian Antiquities in Cairo.
I was going through the museum, and I went to what's called the Royal Mummy Room, where they have the pharaohs, and it listed on a nameplate one of the pharaohs and said he had atherosclerosis, and he died at about 60. So I didn't believe it, because I didn't think people would have atherosclerosis that long ago. It was 3,000 years ago.
Atherosclerosis is characterized by calcification and hardening of the arteries. Thomas and his colleagues figured that even after thousands of years, calcifications might still be detectable on a CT scan. So they scanned a group of mummies with a scanner that had been donated to the museum.
I also didn't believe these guys would have atherosclerosis because I thought they lived a healthier life than we did. What we found, it turns out, is that of the 16 that still had arteries that we could see, 9 of them had calcification.
Thomas says most of the mummies with calcification were older than 45 years of age when they died. The discovery suggests that while a healthful diet may help slow down the artery hardening process, atherosclerosis may be an inevitable part of aging.
We tend to think of atherosclerosis as being something we can avoid, but I actually don't think it is anymore. I think that it's probably more part of the human condition.
He does note that the mummies were all from the upper classes and may have had more access to artery-clogging foods and blood pressure-raising salt.
But they didn't certainly eat all natural food. There's no tobacco. And meat would be pretty expensive. They did have cattle, ducks, and geese, but I can't imagine being a high part of their diet.
He says the next step is to do CT scans on mummified peasants and soldiers to see if lower class members of ancient Egyptian society also suffered from atherosclerosis.
Doing the science of this was incredibly fun. Some of our mummies were almost 4,000 years old, and to think about their lives and then to actually be able to see that they had atherosclerosis was just incredible.
Thanks for that report, Suzanne. Well, that's all we have for you this week. But if you can't wait for next week's podcast, you can get a daily dose of science by listening to the Science Update Podcast Daily Edition every day, Monday through Friday. You can find it on our website, scienceupdate.com, or at iTunes. And remember, if you have a science question for us, give us a call at 1-800-WHY-IS-IT. If we use your question, you'll win one of our brand new Science Update mugs. Thanks for listening. I'm Bob Hirshon for AAAS, the Science Society.